This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show. This is the Adam Gold Show.
I asked for it yesterday.
Yeah,
it's inspiring.
You wanted this.
This is Tommy Trumpet. It was Tommy Trumpet or Timmy? It's Tommy Trumpet, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Timmy, Tommy, whomever.
It's true. It's the Adam Gold Show. I'm Adam Gold. That is Dennis Cox. Welcome to your Friday. You have survived the week.
Have we?
Well, we're not there yet.
Exactly.
We're almost all the way there. Speaking of Tommy or Timmy Trumpet, I'm not. Did you know that Topps is, I think it's 48, a 48 card run? Might be less. He is getting his own baseball card.
Tim Tom Trumpets?
Yes.
We're just going to call him Tim Tom.
He is getting a baseball card. I think that's awesome.
Nice.
Absolutely awesome.
Good for him.
Hey, remember the Hurricanes equipment guy, George Olves?
Oh, yeah.
When he got in for those 17 seconds, mm-hmm. Was it in Tampa?
Sounds about right.
I think it was in Tampa. He played 17 seconds of a game. He's in hockeyreference.com,
yeah.
hockey-reference.com. He's got his own page. He did not allow a goal, did not face a shot in 17 seconds of action, but he is there.
Clean sheet.
Clean sheet, if you will. I have two George Olves hockey cards.
Do you really?
Now, he has a bunch, too. So,
oh, yeah.
I was going to offer him one, and he goes, no, I got to play him.
All right. Probably got a pack.
So they made some George Olves cards.
Nice.
Which is absolutely very cool.
How many David Ayers cards are there out there?
Oh, I'm sure there should be.
I mean, they're doing right? a movie on the guy. There should
yeah,
be
they
a
should,
card.
There should be a David Ayers card. Or many. Many David. He's got a hockey reference because he has a win.
Yeah, he does.
He has a freaking win. That is absolutely awesome.
Win percentage in history.
So that is inspiring music to begin the program. We got a lot of things to do. Fridays are always busy. And I think you and I feel the same way, Dennis, that last night,
mm-hmm.
college football began.
Yeah, it did.
Last night, college football got us started, and we thank them for that. Here's the thing about college football. It's not always pretty. It just isn't. Quarterbacks don't always know where they're throwing the ball.
Mm-mm.
Receivers don't always catch it.
Nope.
I mean, that happens in the NFL too. But with greater frequency in the college game, we have physical errors. But if you are looking for a sport with drama, intrigue, storylines, the drama and intrigue part, we separate Alabama and Ohio State. There's not a lot of drama and intrigue with them unless we're talking about from within. If there's a quarterback battle or not, those are the two best teams in college football. Alabama's a huge favorite right now to win the national championship. And I think Ohio State is right there with them, but Alabama is loaded with pros. They both are, but Alabama, again, is just absolutely loaded with pros. But if you're looking for drama and intrigue, this is the sport for you.
Yeah.
Right? At least in North America. And I've always argued this, which really contradicts what I just said, that I'll bet you right now if we went and tried to predict the outcome of every college football game on the schedule, we could probably get 80% of them right today. I mean, I'm not going to try the exercise, but just picking a winner, we could probably get 80% of them right today.
Be one heck of a parlay.
Well, no, you don't get anything for 80%.
That's true.
That is, but you could you parlay the entire Alabama season? And you absolutely could. Or the entire Ohio State season, you absolutely could. I mean, like Ohio State, as Notre Dame is fifth in the country, right? They're a 17-point underdog at Ohio State tonight, or rather tomorrow night. 17-point underdog. They're top five team, at least so the polls feel. Anyway, we celebrate college football being back in full. Forget about week zero. It is what it is. Now it's back. Tons of great matchups. And we're going to start with one we haven't seen in a while. I was so ready for the go ACC all lowercase hashtag last night at about, I don't know, took too long, like 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Can we get more reviews in college football?
No.
Can we get just more? I want the review of the review in college football.
I'm with it.
Did we have 40 in the fourth quarter last night of Pitt, West Virginia?
At least 37.
It was staggering. It was staggering how bad the flow. There was no flow of the game. I don't know how they played. It was dreadful. But at least the game, when they bothered to play, was dramatic. Pittsburgh probably should have lost to West Virginia. Probably should have lost the game to West Virginia. First renewal of the backyard brawl in 11 years. It was at, what are they calling that stadium now? It's not Heinz Field anymore. We ran out of ketchup.
Acrisure, I think.
Okay, whatever you say. Pitt wins at 38-31, winning points gifted by an interception that was returned for a touchdown that should have easily been about a 15-yard gain for a first down, as West Virginia looked to me like they were just going to drive down the field and retake the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Because Pitt had trailed 31-24, and we're going to get back to this point right now. Question.
Yeah.
Neil Brown, what the hell were you doing? 6:10 to go, length of the football, roughly, fourth and one plus territory, 6:10 left. Keep the ball. You've got a 250,000-pound running back who is absolutely killing it. Hand him the ball. Hand him the ball. They took a delay of game and then punted, and Pitt drove down the field and scored.
Mm-hmm.
Just drove down the field and scored. Like, I know there were some harrowing moments on that drive, and it almost looked like West Virginia was going to guess right, but what are you trying to do, man? Go win a football game. If you pick up the first down, you can run, at worst, you can run another 2.5, maybe 3 minutes off the clock, even if you don't pick up another first down. But now you're just making it more difficult for Pitt. You're just making it that much more difficult. What an Neil Brown, man. Way to go for it.
I think we should name an award after him.
Way to go for it.
Again, Neil Brown Coward Award.
I was fully prepared for an early season hashtag go ACC moment with 6 minutes left. Because West Virginia, to me, was the better team. I mean, Pitt's defensive line finally did come through at the end. We had other, I thought, interesting things. Wake Forest slugged VMI, which is really what they were supposed to do. It was 44-10. More than 500 yards of offense for the Demon Deacons.
Wake covered. It was a 33-point spread.
Okay. You know, I didn't see a spread because it was an FBS-FCS matchup, but yeah, they were a big favorite in the game, and they're obviously no Sam Hartman. Mitch Griffiths was very good, 21 of 29, 288 yards, 3 touchdowns. They ran the ball effectively. They spread it around to a bunch of different wide receivers and tight ends, and Wake's defense did what they were supposed to do against the Keydets. The only real blemish was the long touchdown pass they allowed. That's it. Other than that, there wasn't a lot for even that pass was almost half of VMI's total passing yards. So there was just, that game was exactly what it was designed for Wake, an easy win. And that's okay. If you're Wake, and I've always argued this, if you're Wake, and I'm not trying to disparage the program, if you're Duke, schedule yourself some wins in the non-conference. Although Wake is above that. Wake is probably better than that. Not probably. They are better than that as a football program. Good for the Demon Deacons, because it'll get a little bit more real as we get further into the season. Oklahoma State had a big lead, then let Central Michigan score three touchdowns late to make it close. I don't think they were favored by that much. I think it was only like a 12. No, that was their ranking 12. I don't know what the line was, but I mean, it got close.
Yeah.
It was 58-44, I think, was the final. Penn State scored with less than a minute to play to overcome Purdue on the road, 35-31. Boilermakers had the lead in the fourth quarter thanks to their own pick six.
Yeah.
Horrifically overthrown pass by Penn State's quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't know, 8-9 yards overthrown.
At least.
And then an easy return touchdown. Tennessee won big. My five-team parlay should be dead because Penn State and Pitt were probably both second best in their game, but they both won. So all I need is Virginia Tech to win at Old Dominion tonight. As much as I want Virginia Tech to win the game, I don't deserve to win that parlay based on what happened yesterday. So there you go. Duke hosts Temple tonight. Go Blue Devils. Go Blue Devils. Don't let us down.
All right. Why do what I do?
We have talked a lot about State's trip to East Carolina, UNC's trip to App. And there are two themes that, in my opinion, are the overriding themes for this game. And one deals with the road team, the other deals with the home team. And I'm going to deal with the UNC App game first. Like, North Carolina, I think, will be good. I don't know how good they will be, but I think they will be good. We know they're going to have a good offense. It does appear that their defense will have some struggles, which is something that I believe we're all used to here, right? I mean, we're just all used to that. They've always been a pretty good offensive team. And their defense has not always been great. And I don't believe that this defense will be great. But this to me, and I'm not trying to place it all on App, but there comes a time in a program, you're the little guy, theoretically, but this is a moment for you. This is an opportunity to, on your field, hand a loss. You're still the underdog, even though, frankly, I think these are two very evenly matched teams. But this is an opportunity for you to take a big bite, and it will not be a surprise. App's win in Chapel Hill a few years ago in the Eli Drinkwitz one-year era, that was a surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a big upset win on the road. This will not be a surprise. And I believe that programs, when you get to this level, when you are in this situation, this is the true measure of where you are as a program. I'm not saying App is significantly better than UNC. I'm not even sure that they're better than UNC. But this is a toss-up game. If you are App, I think this is on you. I think this game is apps. It's not apps to win or lose. I think this game is on App. I think Carolina's going to be right there at the end with a chance to win, but I cannot wait to watch it. Now, the other game, State's trip to East Carolina. We're going to get into this a little bit more in depth in a moment, or in our next segment. To me, this is about expectations, and this is where I would love to hear feedback from State fans. What are your expectations for this team? Like, I don't believe they're a national championship contender. They're not that level. But as we have talked about a lot, and I think what most people believe surrounding college football, is that we have tiers of teams. There are the top two, Ohio State and Alabama, in whatever order, it doesn't matter. There's Georgia right behind Alabama and Ohio State. And then the next tier, I don't know. I don't know who it is. And nobody really does. We might have some guesses. It's easy to fall back on Clemson. It's easy. Some people still think Michigan is there. Maybe.
Maybe.
It could be Michigan. I don't know. But there are probably anywhere from Notre Dame, 7 to 15 teams that could lay claim to spot number four. Can State be one of those teams? I don't know. I believe it is about approach as much as anything else. I believe it is about approach. Are you going to go for it? Are you going to try and be that team? Because I think State, we know their defense coming back is great, and we know their offense has a great quarterback. A lot of the other things are kind of unknowns. All right, now let's get back to the game that we saw last night, the Pittsburgh-West Virginia game, because after the game, I was watching SportsCenter. I was watching SportsCenter, and they had Pat Narduzzi on with Scott Van Pelt, and I mean, bless Pat Narduzzi's heart, but he has a chip on his shoulder already. Good for him. And I think Pat had some thoughts about the worldwide leader.
Well, you know what? It was a great atmosphere out here. I can tell you that. Our Panther Nation stood out. You know, I saw some stat that was going to be 75% West Virginia fans. You guys messed that up on ESPN for sure. It was certainly all Pitt here today. And, you know, appreciate what the fans did today. They helped us win that game. I wasn't excited about how we played as a football team. We got a lot of things to clean up. But we told them it was going to be a fourth quarter brawl, and that's what it was. Went right down to the last second of the game, and our guys made some great plays near the end of the game, and that's what counts.
That was so awesome. Ripping ESPN. I'm like, I didn't hear anybody say that, but I don't devour these types of this type of coverage. So it was funny. I thought Scott handled it beautifully.
Yeah.
Like, man, I appreciate the passion.
Yep.
Right? Because, what do you say in that regard? Do you defend it? I mean, I'm sure whether he heard it, he perceived it, and that's fine. But
Narduzzi was all steamed up.
I think Pitt is interesting. Look, at the end of the game, their defensive line certainly showed up, and that was very cool. Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, let's say I have more than $1 million balance in my 401k.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. How can that actually come back and bite me?
Well, because, and this is a thing that we it's a mirage. You see mirages. I've ridden in the desert before. You see what's water ahead, but it's not there. Well, your financial mirage is thinking that that total balance in your 401k or your IRA is yours. We have two people that want to get a hold of it, two uncles, Uncle North Carolina and Uncle Sam.
Right.
Both of them are going to do some damage to that balance. Depending on what kind of other income you have, you could lose 40% of your value. So if you're looking at $1 million IRA, maybe it's only worth $600,000 to you. So how do we get around this? Well, you don't get around it because you end up in jail if you try to do that.
But
you can do tax planning to minimize the effect of taxation into the future. The tax train is coming, Adam. We need to make sure to minimize the effect of the derailment of our financial accounts. And for the next 10 people, we'll do it at no cost or obligation. Put together your very own tax and retirement plan.
800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter. All right, big deal tonight in New York. Dan Wolkin, USA Today, joining us on the Adam Gold Show. In or headed to the National Tennis Center for the Serena Williams show again for the fourth time in 5 nights in prime time. Just your quick thoughts on just the show that we have seen so far.
Yeah, it's kind of unique because you don't normally see one player kind of hijack an entire Grand Slam. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's
right.
Just the reality of the situation. It's right now, everybody is interested in what she's doing. And, you know, I think the announcement that this was going to be the last ride, I don't know, when somebody is as iconic of an athlete as she is, and you know that this is the last time, there's, you know, this kind of desperation to get her home or get her, you know, as far as possible in this event. And, you know, I think it's from what I understand, and I have not been out there yet, but from what I understand, just the crowds are unlike anything anyone's ever seen in terms of getting behind young players. So I'm looking forward to experiencing what that's like, and I'm sure for the other players, it's been a little bit intimidating in a way.
Yeah, it might have been intimidating for the second seed, Annette Konovit, who I thought played very well. That match looked very much like one we might see late in the second week. But it was because I thought Konovit played really, really well. And then Serena's serve late when she needed it kind of took over, although she had some nervous parts of that. You know, it was funny. I don't know if you thought about this as well, but Monday night, I felt like they didn't feel like she was going to go very far, and they laid it on very thick with the ceremony after the opening win. I thought, well, what's next? What do they have left? Apparently they didn't have anything left.
Yeah, I actually kind of like the idea of getting it out of the way. Obviously, in tennis, you don't know if somebody's going to be there the next day or not. It's just kind of one of those things. You got to keep winning, and you just don't know, and I think she came into this every match, in my opinion, was kind of a coin flip at best for her. But if she was going to get by that first one, yeah, just get it out of the way, do the ceremony, and then everyone can kind of move on. You don't have to have this awkward scene, you know, she eventually loses of being sad and
right.
All that kind of stuff. She can just kind of do the normal walk-off and doesn't have to sit there while everybody talks about her and she doesn't want to be out there. So I actually like the way they did it, but... Yeah, who knows? This thing may go for a little while longer.
She doesn't. There's all the seeded players in her little part of the draw are gone. She won't face a seeded player as long as she continues to win until the quarterfinals. What does Tomjanovic kind of pose for her? I think I saw on Twitter at DanWolkin.com or at DanWolkin on Twitter that we have essentially somebody who just hits with a lot of pace and stays at the baseline, so not a lot of variety for Serena to deal with.
Tomjanovic has got some power. She's got a very good backhand. But, yeah, she's not going to be somebody who's throwing things at Serena that are going to trick her or
right.
You know, are going to test her in the same way that somebody like Ons Jabeur might, who
right.
is going to utilize slice and variety and drop shots and angles and those types of things. This is kind of a straightforward type of match, which I think at this stage of the game is one Serena can win. I think it's when somebody takes pace off the ball, when somebody's using a lot of slice, forcing her to get really low, move side to side. I think that's where it gets more complicated for her. But in terms of just somebody hitting the ball hard down the middle, she can still do that with the best of them. And if she's serving well, then you know I think she's probably the favorite in this match.
Two quick things before we let Dan Wolkin go. He's headed up to the National Tennis Center for Serena's latest night match, and that's where I want to go. Like, normally, you'll play a night match, then they'll make you play in the afternoon. It doesn't look like the USTA is going to do that with Serena, that they're going to give her the night matches all the time, which is great for television, but maybe not the fairest thing because the weather is better, the humidity is a little lower, the heat is obviously less. This is sort of tailor-made for her as long as she keeps winning. Is there an unfairness about it?
Well, that's sort of a bigger topic in tennis, and it applies to all of the great players. There's always been this sort of undercurrent of jealousy or accusation that, you know, that Federer or Nadal, that they get all the preferred court assignments or that
sure.
they influence when they play. You know, Nadal doesn't want to play at night in the French Open because his ball doesn't bounce as high, so they put him in the day. You know, those kinds of things people talk about. Look, I think the whole idea forever of the U.S. Open has been that these night sessions are the premier matches that people want to see, and that this is what makes that ticket such a valuable ticket. And so giving that slot to Serena Williams makes total sense. Now, we'll see on Sunday. A lot of it's dictated by television. You know, sometimes ESPN doesn't want Sunday night to be a marquee matchup. Sometimes, you know, for television, it's better Sunday afternoon. So we'll see what they do if she wins tonight, where they slot her on Sunday. But, I don't really put too much credence in it. It's definitely probably helps her to play that 7 p.m. match, but she's earned that type of treatment.
Dan Wolkin, Appreciate your time, man. Enjoy the match. It should be an absolute blast tonight at the National Tennis Center. Thanks again. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Adam.
Here's what's interesting, and I don't know, you don't watch it, so Tiger Woods was at the match the other night.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't that.
Tiger was there. And it's been star-studded. Spike Lee is trying to outdress himself every other night. It'll be interesting to see what Spike's got on tonight. But the Tiger part of this does take me back to the Masters in 2019. Now, Tiger didn't have an amazing first round. He wasn't in the top 10. But from the second round on, Tiger was on the fringe, and he was only a couple of shots back. So, yeah, he was right there. But maybe I'm crazy, but I never thought that Tiger was going to win that tournament until we got, like, the middle of the fourth round, Sunday round. I'm like, wait a second. Because there were a bunch of players, just a couple of shots, two, maybe three shots ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden you went, oh, these guys are all falling apart and Mr. Woods isn't.
Yeah.
Like, he's just going to stick around and let everybody screw it up. And that's what happened. Like, four guys ahead of him hit the ball in the water on the 12th hole. So, I'm not saying Serena can win this tournament. Because I don't believe she can, but I do believe that she's going to scare some people, and she might intimidate her way into the quarterfinals.
Mm-hmm.
And she said yesterday or 2 days ago that she's playing free.
Yeah.
There are no expectations, and that's a dangerous spot for somebody like Serena Williams. Again, I don't think physically, and I think Dan said this, physically it's going to be hard to win seven matches.
Yeah.
Right. It actually probably helps her that her and her sister lost in doubles last night.
Probably.
And they were clearly second best on the court last night. Clearly second best on the court.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19th, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcast. The calm before the storm of the first real big weekend of the college football season. It started last night as Pitt almost go ACC'd their way into an early hole and an early disappointing loss, but they won. They somehow managed to be gifted a win by West Virginia, and thank you
go
to
ACC.
Mountaineers coach Neil Brown for refusing to win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm trying to think who used to do this. Thank you for not coaching. I think it was Bill Connolly who wrote these things on ESPN.
Oh, really?
I could be wrong. It could be somebody else that deserves the credit for that. I think it was Bill. Thank you for not coaching. Neil Brown, what were you doing? A foot from a first down with 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter and a touchdown lead in plus territory. You ain't going for it? Really? Okay. All right. We'll file that away. All right. So I hope, given the same situation, Dave Doran will go for it. And that's where I am here. I am in a – it depends on what your view is of NC State's season. What are your expectations? What are the possibilities for the Wolfpack? Because if we're simply talking about, hey, maybe we can win 10 games, then, you know, you could take a conservative approach, and that's fine. But I think that's the baseline. I think anything short of 10 wins for this team probably means there were injuries, and it also probably means they didn't get the most out of it. This is the opportunity. Like, it's, to me, it's the difference. I use this phrase with Chip Patterson, and I want to take some phone calls here. 919-860-5326. If you play it close, if you play it conservatively, yeah, you're probably going to win 9 or 10. And that'll be fine. But I think the approach is the difference between winning 9 or 10 or maybe winning 11 or 12 and really, really setting the bar for NC State football. 919-860-5326. Mike from Siler City. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, Adam, I love your show. Die-hard Wolfpack fan. I agree with everything you said so far. Anything less than 10 wins is going to be a disappointment, barring major injuries.
Right.
This has got to be our most complete team since I'm 52, since I've been alive, as far as offense and defense. I have extremely nervous optimism right now because I'm a diehard State fan. I know how we can look good and screw things up real bad. We should go to ECU. We should come out with a win, whether it's a three touchdown or 1 point. If we get beat, God hope we don't, I'm not going to be 100% shocked because of our past.
Right.
I hope that we are where Clemson was Deshaun Watson's freshman year, where they made that big leap to the next level. Now, we're not at Clemson's level yet. We're close. Mm-hmm. But I think we're close to that second tier. I want to try to get to that second tier. Maybe we're in the third tier. I'm not sure about how you look at your tiers. I want to get to that second tier where we have a shot at that number four spot. That's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, see, I think that's the third tier because I don't think Georgia's with Alabama and Ohio State. I think Georgia is a clear number three, but that's fine. Even if we put Georgia in the first tier and you got a bunch of teams competing for that fourth spot, and I don't even know in my mind if I see NC State as really a player for number four, but
no, not right now.
But all it takes, but here's the thing, is that all it takes is the great year, is the dream season, and then somebody's going to have to be fourth. And
exactly.
NC State should be 4-0 in their non-conference. October 1 in Death Valley. I'm not saying it's the season because it really depends on what happens before and after, but that will tell us if they have a chance to be number four. And they can't get there. I think that this is an important week for setting the tone and having a mindset of we are going to go for it. And that's what I want to see out of this team.
We've got to go for the green. You've said it. We've got to. We need to be 0-4 going to Clemson. I would have better expectations of beating Clemson and actually losing somewhere else along the schedule. I'm not kidding you. I mean, Clemson can be undefeated, us undefeated. I would actually have a better feeling about going to Death Valley and beating them or going undefeated with the rest of the season. That's how we do things. We'll beat teams we're not shouldn't beat, and we'll get beat by teams that we should beat. That's our history.
Mike,
get past that history.
I appreciate the phone call. Stay well out in Siler City. Here's the thing about this. I realize that this is a very, very tall ask from me. I would like to eliminate the past. I would like to eliminate NC State stuff. I would like to, this is how we've done, I would like to eliminate all of those things. Because if we do eliminate that mindset, those, like, at some point we move on, and I'll use this analogy. This is not a golf analogy. It used to be that the Red Sox could not win. As good as they would have great years, but ultimately we're not going to win. The Red Sox no longer are that team. They're no longer that franchise because they have won four World Series since 2004. So it's no longer a franchise that, oh, well, you know, that's the Red Sox for you. No, they are a team that expects to win. And in many respects, they have left that old mindset alone. I think it's time for NC State to leave that. Again, we'll see what happens. I think a lot of it is how you approach these games. I'm going to ask one more question about the Wolfpack in a second. First, Chris from Clayton. What's going on?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Going well.
So my expectations for State this year, a clear expectation should be 10-2, 4-0 going through non-conference, going into Death Valley undefeated. I mean, last year we had a depleted defense with Fagan, Pitts, Wilson going down,
uh-huh.
and playing first year players. or second year players.
And it was still good.
So, yeah, and we were still good.
And it was still good.
Exactly. So, I mean, clear expectations should be 4-0 going into Death Valley. And, I mean, Clemson and all is good. I mean, there's no doubt about it, but the big question mark for them is which quarterback is going to be playing for them.
Right. Might not. Their quarterback might not matter, right?
Exactly. I mean, with how good our defense is projected, I mean, it shouldn't matter. And, I mean, yes, we do need to move past the mindset of NC State stuff.
Yeah. I've always said this, is that these types of things, it's a self-prophecy. It's like we talk ourselves into, like, the whole notion that, well, State's always better when expectations are lower. Like, why? That doesn't make any sense to me. The teams are always different. Right, every year it's a different team. Now, this is a lot more similar to last year's team. There are so many familiar faces and names, and they're all older and more experienced. So I appreciate your call. Let me get to Xavier from Raleigh. I hope I did that right. If it's either Xavier or Javier.
Xavier. It's Xavier.
All right. Xavier. I didn't even get the second option right. What's up?
No, okay. Hey, yeah, definitely. I just want to say that definitely NC State definitely should be 4-0 starting off. ECU, I'll say 14 points.
Are you there? Did we lose Xavier? All right. Look, first of all, I do think I do think NC State will win this game. Right. I think they'll beat ECU. I don't think it's a given, right? Dowdy Ficklin's a hard place to play.
I don't think even Texas Tech's a given.
Nothing.
We get through ECU 4-0.
Nothing is given.
Yeah, Texas Tech ain't no given either.
Nothing is given.
No.
I do expect the Wolfpack to be 4-0.
Yeah.
But I will not be shocked if they're 3-1. What I will be is sort of, okay, that's just what this is. Which is why I have said this before, that there's only been one season when NC State has maxed out their win total. And that was the pandemic year, when they went 7-3. They didn't win any spectacular games, but they didn't lose any games that they should have won.
Yeah, fair point.
That has been this program, that has been the Achilles has been, yeah, there's always been a win, sometimes two, that, yeah, we should have had that. They have to avoid that. They have to get away from that. If they do that this year, then there's a handful of games that are what we would consider toss-ups. I think they closed the season with two games on the road. I think it's Louisville and then Carolina, right, are the two road games. Those are both going to be really, really hard games to win. North Carolina at Keenan Stadium ain't going to be easy, and Louisville, I think, could be sneaky good. It's actually a very important game tonight. I know it's an ACC game. It's Louisville at Syracuse. But if the ACC is going to be good, thought of as good this year, Louisville has to be part of the good, and that means winning at Syracuse, who is going to have, at the very least, a great running game. And I think they probably will have a good defense. But Malik Cunningham is a dynamic player, and we want to see him play well and all of that. But it's important for NC State to kind of shake all of the old expectations and max out. And I don't even think 10 is max.
No.
I think 10 is the base. A 10-2 regular season will be okay.
That's what they should do.
Right.
This
that's
year.
No, I mean, I don't know if should, whatever. I think 10-2 would be okay. That's good. That's good. But even though they've never done it, at least without excessive FCS games, I wouldn't look at 10-2 as a great season. And real quick about this, and I'll just expand on it on the other side for a second. Because I heard this conversation. that a loss tomorrow doesn't ruin NC State's season. I will tell you when we come back why it does. Next.
You're going to leave. I better get used to that.
See, Adam Gold Show. I'm Adam Gold. Dennis Cox is the producer of this program. The return of Minute Takes is today, where we go through rapid fire a bunch of games.
Yes.
And we sort of divide a minute between us and give takes on games. I cannot wait for that. It's always been fun during the course of the football season because that's really what it's about. And then we fold in some other sports, other games here and there. But it's going to be mostly college football. We will give takes on college football games.
Expect EPL.
Of course.
The real football.
We have to talk about the amount of money spent by the Premier League yesterday or this whole window at some point today. Anyway, but I asked the question, and we also have in the mentions, which we're going to get to, some tweets that came my way that are worth discussing. But I did ask the question, or I've heard this conversation, that a loss to East Carolina would not ruin NC State's season. And here's why that is, in my opinion, absolutely false. Not only would a loss to ECU completely spoil the rest of the season in terms of national aspirations. Like, there's no path back if State loses at East Carolina. Like, again, this is not disparaging ECU. But here's why it ruins the season. Even if State somehow goes 11-0 the rest of the way, it's because at some point, as you're doing that, you're going to go, how the hell did we lose in week one? Remember what happened when Carolina lost their opener and then won out? Remember?
Yeah.
There were two FCS games in there, but remember that?
Mm-hmm.
There was like, well, they can't go to the playoff. There was a legitimate debate whether or not Carolina deserved to be a playoff team after winning 11 games in a row. They were 11-1 after the opening loss to South Carolina. South Carolina wasn't that good. They were 11-1. And the legitimate debate was, well, you know, they shouldn't have lost. So, in a way, that loss, maybe it helped them, but it also ruined their season. I think this game will be an indication as much as anything. I really do. For the Wolfpack. I hope they play well. I hope East Carolina plays well. I hope it's a great football game. I want to see NC State let Devin Leary cook.
Yeah.
All right. Don't be conservative. Let Devin Leary go and do his thing. All right. Now, let's go in the mentions.
You're talking to me? Then who the hell else are you talking to?
Talking to me?
Well, I'm the only one here.
I was a little light my own on social media this week. So almost all of my responses on social media had something to do with LIV Golf. So Harold Varner was one of the players to go, right? And NC Beachbound responded. I talked about Varner going and why I respected what he said about the reasons for him going. And NC Beachbound says, I am disappointed to see Varner make the move. In one way, I am disappointed to see Varner make the move. But in another way, I am totally on board with why he made the move. Like,
yeah, he was open about it.
It was about financial security forever.
Yeah.
He's so he grew up, you know, with not a lot. So, right? So he wasn't a country, a country club kid. He wasn't somebody who's whose dad was the head pro somewhere. It wasn't that. A lot of these guys grow up and they're in upper middle class to wealthy families. So they have access to a lot of teaching and a lot of coaching and a lot of opportunity to play, and that wasn't Varner. So I get that the money is the most important thing. Like, I totally respect what Varner is doing as opposed to Cam Smith. Totally respect it. I get it. So while I'm disappointed, I understand why Varner did it, and I got no problem with it. You go to live. That's fine. That's okay by me. And then Joe tweeted out to me, or just in general, watching what Liv is doing should be an eye-opener for other pro sports. They are contracting the players with assessed worth and giving them opportunities to earn more. All right, here's where we have to correct behavior. If you assign any value and meaning to what Liv is doing, that is the mistake. Liv is not a business model. Liv is only a disruptor. It is not trying to do anything other than take players from the PGA Tour. That's it. That's all it's trying to do. They might be successful. I don't know. But the amount of money they're paying, even if they had a TV contract and sponsors, that is outrageous in terms of the amounts. It's just not a business model. Don't assign any real meaning to what Liv is doing. Just don't. Again, I got no problem if you're going. These guys are getting paid, and I get it. Everybody's got a price. Everybody's got a price. But that's not a business model.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19th, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.